Here is a pass underneath. Watley can go up, and he threw in a circus shot. In heavy traffic, he just gypsy-doodled it up there, and he has six.
WGN, Mark Harmon, Jordan Bernfield with you tonight till 10 o'clock. I am super excited to talk to former Chicago Bull, Atlanta Hawk, Washington Bullet, Portland Trailblazer, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the LA Clippers, the San Antonio Spurs. Enes Watley is on the line, and he joins us now on 720 WGN. Also, don't forget Alabama, straight out of the Crimson Tide, playing Michael Jordan in the Sweet 16 back in the day. Enes, thank you so much for being on with us.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me and everything. How are you guys doing up there?
We're doing great. Well. Everyone's kind of wondering, you know, what was the reaction of everyone who played on Jordan's rookie year team when he's asked about the cocaine circus, and people are saying that Michael was talking out of turn. Enes, you were on that team. Did it offend you that he was joking around and giving details of what was going on in a hotel room?
Well, not really, you know, because, you know, I think it's great stuff because, you know, this is kind of like part of my, you know, my life, you know, me overcoming, you know, drugs and alcohol. But I kind of understood where he was coming from. But, you know, it was when he mentioned it and everything, I kind of knew, you know, what he was talking about. But I actually really didn't see him in the room. But I kind of understood where he came. But, no, he didn't offend me because that's kind of like part of what I do now as a living, you know.
So, and okay, so you don't remember Michael walking into the room. You have no recollection of that?
No, I didn't see him. You know, I'm not saying, I'm pretty sure I've heard so many other stories. You know, as you know, everyone has a story, but I just down through the years, you know, I've, you know, heard many people say, you know, when Michael walked into the room and all his teammates, you know, were getting high, you know.
So let me ask you then, Enes, because when you heard the way it was described in The Last Dance, the way he described it was sort of, I mean, calling it the cocaine circus, it makes it sound like this is this completely, you know, uncontrolled kind of thing going on. Was he accurate in the way that he described things?
Well, I think he had a good point. I thought, no, he was pretty accurate in the sense of, you know, what was going on in the 80s. You know, it was a culture, you know, of a lot of people. I don't think we were the only one, you know, but, you know, there was a lot of people that, you know, kind of was using, you know, substance. And, you know, that was a big thing back in the 80s and everything.
Well, Enes, first of all, I really appreciate you sharing. And I know that it can be considered a vulnerable spot. I've always... Well, what I've been saying, Enes, from my perspective, look, nobody goes through their life perfect, right? And when you're a young guy and you're making NBA dollars, not that you were making back then what they're making today, but it's still pretty good money living that life, you're not all, you know, a lot of guys aren't going to make perfect decisions. So I don't think you have anything to defend, is what I'm saying. This is part of, you're on your own journey, and I'd be curious to hear how you were able to get yourself past that point in your life, but I don't think you have anything to apologize for.
Well, you know, the thing about it, though, is part of life. It's the process of life. And like I said, you know, if anybody, you know, probably go through their own life, you know, if you was in the 80s or 70s or, you know, just say the hippie generation, you know, you was experienced. But unfortunately, you know, for me, and, you know, it just played a huge part, you know, in my life. You know, I realized because of, you know, just the experience that I had with drugs and alcohol, you know, how when I, you know, look back on hindsight, how it affected my career. And even, you know, through The Last Dance and just, you know, being on this interview, you know, talking about it, you know, openly, you know, and you know, not ashamed because, you know, I speak to so many people and help so many people, you know, around the world because it can happen to anybody. You know, it doesn't have a color or anything like that. I'm just thankful to God to be, you know, clean 32 years now, you know.
That's great.
And 32 years.
You deserve a ton of credit for that. That's incredible that you've been clean for that long and that you were able to overcome it and that you're helping others. I mean, that's, you know, if that's going to happen, that's the only thing anyone could ever ask is that you can do those things and you're doing it. So it's great. Enes, on that point, one of the things that struck me at the beginning of The Last Dance when Michael was talking about this cocaine circus and everything was when he was drafted by the Bulls, talking about how he wanted, you know, like making mention that the Bulls were kind of the, just this like circus franchise and he wanted to turn them into something respected and proud and everything. And you played in the NBA for a while. What was the perception of the Chicago Bulls before Michael got there, and how much did you see it change after he was there?
See, the thing I see, because this perspective, you know, and he's sharing his story, you know, like I have a story. Every person that was on the Bulls, God bless Orlando Woods and Quinn Daly, you know, those were the guys, and like myself, you know, were kind of targeted for. But I remember, like I said, Michael Jordan, not the MJ, even from, you know, the drafting part. I remember just even when he had got drafted, you know, if you listen to his draft thing, you know, he was not the same MJ, you know, like in The Last Dance. You know, I don't remember that guy. You know, I remember more of a wide-eyed, you know, just joking, you know, enthusiastic guy. You know, Michael always known for jokes and everything. You know, that's what I remember. But, you know, it was a tough environment, to answer your question. You know, when you come in, you know, and coming under those conditions, I always look back hindsight saying, if, you know, coming in at 19 or 20 years old, if I could have came in up under different conditions, that even my career, you know, would have been so much better. But I didn't. You know, there was a decision that I made, and by making those decisions, you know, it, like I said in a lot of other interviews, I forfeited a lot of things. You were calling out the amount of teams that, you know, I played for. I literally played for like close to 10 teams in the league, and the difference between, you know, being a Hall of Famer, because, you know, I was pretty ranked pretty high myself, or either being a journeyman, you know, it's the difference from that decision.
Yeah, and still, and I get it that you believe you could have had a greater impact on the league, but to hang around as long as you did, and I know you had years in the middle of it where you weren't playing, it's still impressive, Enos. You should be proud of yourself, and I get the desire to have done more. Were you, looking back on like 85, 86, your third year in the league, you only played 14 games total. Was that when you were trying to get yourself clean? Is that why you were missing so much time?
Well, actually, when Krauts them traded me to Cleveland, I ended up going to San Antonio and the Washington Bullets beforehand. And I actually had a knee injury, you know, in the process. I had tendonitis real bad. So when I only played 14 games, I was kind of like getting 10-day trials, you know, at the time and everything. And that's the reason why you've seen only 14 games after the Cleveland Cavaliers had, you know, released me. I only played 14 games that year. And then I came back and resurfaced with the Washington Bullets, you know, that following year.
Yeah, yeah. I want to circle back to you brought up Quinton Daly and Orlando Woolridge,
sure,
who
yeah,
are no longer with us, but it's,
yeah,
you know, I was born in 1973, and like my family was huge into basketball. That was you know, it was the Jerry Sloan Bulls. Rest in peace to Jerry as well.
Yeah, for sure.
And so Quinton was my favorite player before Michael came along.
Sure.
And it was always, you were always scared that he was going to get suspended again, because that was, you know, he'd be playing, and then eventually a drug test would come along, and he'd have to sit out for a period of time. But he was so talented and a tremendous offensive player, could get his shot off on anyone. I'm just curious, like, what do you remember about Q?
Well, Q was really a good friend of mine. You know, a lot of people kind of, shunned him a little bit, you know, because of that. But, you know, we were okay friends, you know. You know, from being in the backcourt together, you know, I currently hold an assist record even as we speak in Chicago, and he wanted the very reason, because, man, Q could flat out fill it up. And I think with him and myself, even Orlando Woods, if I may just speak openly a little bit, I know, you know, God bless their soul and everything. I believe that, you know, under different circumstances that, you know, we all probably could have been much greater player. But I think if, you know, if that cloud was not over Quinn Daly at the time, man, Quinn Daly was a very tough two guard that could play with anybody. And I think one of the best pull-up jump shooters, you know, to play the game, you know.
Did the organization know what was going on?
I'm not totally sure, but I kind of sensed it. Like, I always share this story, you know, when I talked to my other former college coach, Wim Sanderson. I was saying that, you know, after my first year playing with Mike, you know, it's kind of fun and ironic that I see The Last Dance come on and just how, you know, everyone kind of like, you know, you ever seen the movie The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly, and you see all these different type stories and everything, but the dysfunctional part, I had a, Rod Thorn drafted me. But I had a meeting with Krause and Reinthorff right before, you know, after we had finished the season. And, you know, they told me, they said, Ennis, you know, you're a good guy. We, you know, we're looking forward, you know, for you and Mike being in the backcourt together, you know. And, you know, I said to myself, I said, you know, I'm going to go home and get in better shape and come back and have a great year. So as I was going home, you know, I was traveling back to my hometown, Alabama. I ended up getting stopped by the police, and I didn't have my license on me at the time. And when the police came back in, you know, just to say, you know, my name and everything, he said, "You Ennis Wallace?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Oh, by the way, you've been traded to the Cleveland Cavaliers." I said, "Hold, wait a minute." I said, "I just talked to the GM, and they told me, you know what I'm saying, they liked me, and it was, you know, I was looking forward to coming back next year." Man, it was just crazy. So I'm not shocked and surprised, you know, even when The Last Dance with all the, you know, just, you know, crazy things being said, but that's the business and the nature of the game of basketball.
Hey, Ennis, can you hang on for 2 minutes here? Yeah. I would love to continue the conversation with you, if that's okay.
Sure, that's fine.
All right, let me take a quick time out here. We'll continue with Ennis Watley, formerly of the Chicago Bulls, on 720 WGN. Ennis Watley with us here on 720 WGN. I'm going to let Jordan Bernfield ask this question, Ennis, but I have the same question. Go ahead, Jordan.
Well, Ennis, I want, you know, you were talking about the difference between Michael Jordan and MJ, and I'm just curious,
sure.
when you kind of knew that he was MJ, right? Like, at what point in his rookie season were you like, oh, my God, this guy's incredible?
Yeah, I hadn't talked with Mike. I have not talked with Mike since we kind of played together in Chicago. I remember Michael Jordan. Now the MJ part is like what I seen in the documentary and all those things like that. I don't know. It's a different guy right there. You know, when they, you know, start winning championships and all those things. Because I remember Mike and I have so much history together. We was on the we come out of the class of 81 out of high school, which was considered the best class, 79 and 81, and we was on the McDonald's All American team, we was on the Playboy All American team, and even when he got drafted, you know, he mentioned my name. If you look back over that tape, and you can see even in his voice, you know, he was speaking from a different like perspective and everything. But I noticed, you know, in The Last Dance, that's why I said the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know, as you know, I was really the first point guard that played with Mike. So I don't think at the time none of us knew who was going to rise to the cream of the crop at the time, because I remember him being this wiry, just always a jokester, always kind of like, you know, crack jokes and everything, but just driven and just incredible focus and level and just trying to be the best player, you know, he can be. But, you know, to answer your question, to me, Michael Jordan, you know, when he's come out just a country boy from North Carolina, you know, and just, you know what I'm saying, trying to make the best of his career, which he did. But the MJ part, you know, it's been interesting to me watching it like everybody else to see some of the things that transpired after I played 1 year with him and was traded, you know, to Cleveland, you know, and I heard a lot of different stories, you know, from the different teammates, you know, how many point guards he needed, you know, and all those things, you know, as he played the game.
So I got a brother who's 15 years older than me, Ennis, and he was at your second season, Jordan's rookie year, the third game of the year against Milwaukee. And the Bucks they were a great team, Terry Cummings and Sidney Moncrief and all these guys. And I think it was the fourth quarter and you were down. And the way he describes it is that everybody's attitude on the team, it kind of looked like you were going to lose. And then this 23 character just went bananas, scored 37, and you ended up winning the ball game. Do you remember that game?
I definitely remember a game. I remember, you know, like for sure, you know, I got a memory like an elephant, you know, in when it comes to back, you know, playing it. But I don't, like I said, if his perspective, you know, I guess Mike always kind of had that type of driven part about him that, you know what I'm saying, he just had that next level like that. But I don't think really no one knew at the time, you know, because or just the uncertainty or like and just through history, you know, the Bulls, you know, was not playing well at that time and you know, was known for, you know, just losing at that time. I believe, you know, him coming from North Carolina and probably coming into him, that's probably the way, you know, he felt. And a lot of times just trying to figure things out. But I can't say on his behalf, you know, he was an extraordinary player that I hadn't seen anything like it, the levels that he played at. And just, you say about the Milwaukee game, just seeing that MJ come out is incredible, because everyone was kind of like sitting back saying, like, who is this, you know, this guy, even though I had played with him, to see the MJ part come out, man, is incredible, man. That's why, you know, I don't think it's anyone else even in the rim or that area, you know.
So you've been able to go down memory lane talking with us and doing these different interviews that you said you've done. And I'm just curious, as a guy that, you know, knew him from the country boy in Wilmington, North Carolina, to rookie year, you're on, you know, you're playing with him, and then you were part of this. So, like, when you watched The Last Dance, what was it like for you as somebody that was a part of this story? That, you know, like, were you texting with all kinds of friends and talking to people about the old days and things of that nature? I'm just curious, as somebody who played a part in the story, what it was like for you to watch The Last Dance.
It's incredible, because I've gotten so many calls and just texts, man, because if you go back to high school, man, I had a fantastic career ahead of me, you know, just from being, you know, the number one ranked guard and coming out in college and everything. But, to go back on that part, man, it's just that it's been crazy, you know, because of the fact that, you know, you hear all these different things and what you went through. I know, like, B.J. Armstrong, I think Sam Benson, man, like maybe five or six or seven other point guards came behind me. So I think the figuring out part was, it wasn't just me. A lot of people said, well, he didn't have any firepower with him and all those things. But I was just saying it took a whole lot of other people to come along, Phil Jackson to come along, you know, the right player to come along. I think Michael Jordan even maturing himself, you know, from my perspective, you know, because, you know, he could score points all the time, but making other people better, you know, and just a whole lot of other things, you know, that kind of sticks out in my mind in The Last Dance. But even just the kind of the way he went about, you know, just talking to the players and different things, he never I didn't know that Michael Jordan, because the Michael Jordan we knew was not like that. The MJ that I seen in The Last Dance, I was like, wow, you know, I'm blown away myself, you know.
One of those guards was Craig Hodges, and I talked to Hodges recently. He was on my the Windy City podcast, and he was livid at Michael for talking about Horace Grant giving stuff to Sam Smith, and he was livid about him saying the cocaine Bulls. He thought that was completely off as far as breaking code. Did you think that Jordan had broken a player's code the way he talked openly?
I just think that a lot of people say, well, what are you doing down there in the room? You know, like, what he doing down there? You know, just people saying, normally when you're in your hotel room, everybody go to their room, you know, and you close your door. And, you know, because no one kind of go to anybody else's room. Whatever they do, that's their on-the-road thing, or that's what they're doing. I was just saying on his behalf, when he said that he came into the room and seen that, and he chose not to go in the room at the time, I just said, from my perspective, I talk to young kids all around the world about, if I had to do it over again, in hindsight, you know, I would stay away from the drugs and alcohol, because it made me forfeit, you know, I believe, you know, the top part of my career, you know, because I was great up to that point. But when I got to that point, I forfeit, I believe, a lot of opportunity. But as far as him being out of line, you know, it's stories, it's a documentary. So, you know, everybody has a story. From his perspective, I guess that's what he's seen. From my perspective, I never seen him in the room. And I never knew who talked or who what. But I just, for myself, I could speak on my own behalf. I'm 32 years clean now. And just say that I was guilty, you know. So that's the only thing I, you know, I was guilty. So I can't say anything much about that part, you know. I never seen him in the room, you know. So I guess that's his perspective of it. You know?
A for honesty and A for getting cleaniness. And as we get on out of here, who are you working with now? How are you been able to give your message and help young guys?
Yeah, I speak around the world, you know. As I became a born again believer, I'm not just, a lot of people say they go to this after doing it, but actually, when my mom passed away in '87, and my dad 2 months after she did, I decided, you know, to change my life. But my mom always a praying woman, and I decided to come on the other side and just go around, you know, and speak about, you know, just, you know, prevented drugs and alcohol, and just going around and telling people about the decision and the choice that, you know, that you're making and everything. So I basically go around, got married to a beautiful woman and with my wife, got two sons, Marcus, 32, and Enos Jr., 30, and I'm getting ready to be a grandfather in about 2 weeks.
That's great.
So I'm very excited, man. I can't thank, you know, enough, man. I love Chicago, love playing there. Wish it could have went better, but it didn't. That's the part of life. But you know, just happy. And also, I'm proud of Michael Jordan. Real I am. You know, just I think he's grown a lot in just what he was able to do as a person, and you know, as a black man. You know, I'm just, you know, just happy to even be connected and involved with it. You know.
Do you remember? I'm not going to sleep tonight if I don't ask you this one. What do you remember about the '92 finals? You were on that Portland team. You're in the stadium. You're watching 6 3-pointers.
Yeah.
All of it.
Sure. You know, the crazy part about that is that I always say, I think if I would have, they say I went one pick before Clyde Drexler, I went 13, Clyde Drexler went 14. I would have switched spots with Clyde Drexler any day to where Chicago, if Clyde Drexler would have came to Chicago, and I would have went to Portland, because the environment in Portland was a healthy environment that was unbelievable with Buck Williams and Jerome Kersey, bless his soul, Cliff Robertson, man, and Danny Ainge and all those guys. Man, if I could have come up on the matured into this like that, I've seen how just, you know, hindsight that my career probably could have been better. But it was a great team, a great organization. I think Portland won the best organization I ever played for and everything. But it was interesting. I had mixed emotions coming back, you know, wondering in your mind if you could have been on that team if you was clean and just having the opportunity to play for NBA championship. It's a lifetime dream. It really is.
Yeah. Enos, thanks so much. We really appreciate the time. Continued success to you, my friend.
Yeah, this was a real pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And Ken, if I can just say, I always say this at the course, you know, to everyone that's been affected by, you know, the pandemic and everything, that please stay safe. You know, good news is coming. Fortunately, we'll be out of it pretty soon. And also, too, if I can just give my condolences for Jerry Sloan, you know, former Bull players, man, to him and his family and everything. You know, God bless his soul and everything. All right.
Appreciate that, Enos.
Appreciate it, guys.
Stay safe. Okay. Enos Whatley, the former Chicago Bull, who might have been yelled at by Kathy Harrison from her first row seats in Indiana. We're going to talk to Kathy next, 720 WGN.